Hey guys, you're listening to the Everything Working Equitation podcast, hosted by Seth and Michelle Marshall and Bailey Yee. We will be providing you with training tips for horse and rider, working equitation news updates, and fun interviews with show managers, judges, competitors, and much more. To support this podcast, hit the follow button, leave us a review, and share it with your friends. If you have content requests or would like to be featured on our show, send us an email at everythingworkingequitation@gmail.com. Enjoy this episode. Now let's get into it.
Hello, everyone. We are back. We are going to be talking about the Train to Win Clinic that was held in Weatherford, Texas this last week. And I think we're going to do this as three parts. This should be part one. So just know if you're hearing this episode, there's two other parts. Go find them and listen to them.
Yeah, we were fortunate enough to get interviews with four different professionals that were either running or participating in this event. So that's really exciting.
Absolutely. And I got to be there from Monday through Sunday. And the whole event was excellent. Learned a bunch. And it was really good to see the changes in the riders and the horses from one end of the week to the other. So that was a lot of fun. And Bailey got to join us. You were there for which day?
Was it Thursday or Friday? It was the first day, I believe.
Okay, Thursday then.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. I got to watch you ride. And
oh, no.
It was really good. I got a lot from it. So
we'll talk about some of the highlights and some of what we took away. Hopefully it was the right things, but we'll talk about our interpretation of the rides, and I can talk about my ride. And I actually was fortunate enough; I got three rides, and Kelly loaned me a horse, her advanced horse, and so got to play around with a couple of different horses, and it was great experience for sure.
Yeah, Seth was the guinea pig, first rider of the official event, isn't that right?
Oh yes, yeah. And I think Kelly Campbell, the international committee chair, I think she knew. She was like, Seth cannot tell me no. And so we will have Jose lecture from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. And then Seth can get on his horse after we watched all these master's horses at the championship show. And then we'll put Seth out there and he can show us how it's done. So, but it was good. It was good. And I really... You know, there's some nerves that come with that. You have 60, 70 people there for working equitation. And these people are there because they're more interested in the advanced work. And so there was definitely some pressure that came with that. But as soon as I got into my lesson and, you know, Jose is very kind, very generous. So that kind of melted away pretty quickly. That and, you know, with all the canter work, I was trying to breathe. So,
yeah, it was great to see a bunch of the judges there. And then we also had some people that are just introduced to working equitation as well. It was really neat to see everybody. It's pretty busy.
Yeah, and I think that was part of the intention. I'm not on the international committee, so I can't speak too much on their plans, but I do think there was some intention there to make sure that this education is for everyone. You know, you look at it and you're like, oh, well, they're just talking about people who might be interested in riding internationally. But I think it's really for everyone. You know, you can come, you can be an L1 rider and you can come audit this event and learn so much. And it really helps center you on where are you aiming? You know, where do you go from where you're at and what are you looking for? And to have that caliber of judge and clinician come in was just phenomenal.
One thing I found really, really valuable with this clinic as compared to some of the others I've been to, and not better than another, just different, so it brought a different perspective, was that we were getting this from a judge's perspective and not a trainer perspective. So he's telling us how to get into those eights, nines, maybe even the elusive 10, from his perspective, not from the training and breaking everything down. That's for your trainer to do, and he made that very clear. You need a good dressage trainer to be working with that on regularly, and he's here to give you that perspective from the judge's box, which was so neat to hear.
Yeah, I agree. He also covered sportsmanship, how important it is in this discipline and sport. And a lot of the times I haven't heard anybody else really cover. Like, I know in the back of my mind, if you take something seriously, you have to be a sportsman about it. But he covered that and he really felt strongly about it. So I thought that helped a lot too.
Yeah, I think that's also, it's such a cultural thing for them that it's really nice to see that brought into our sport and give us all that reminder. That's what this sport is about, and keep us on the right path, essentially, with where it should be and the history in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and with someone so heavily involved at the international level, it was really nice to see firsthand, this is someone who is helping guide our sport at the top levels, and to see his dedication to the sport and his dedication to where the sport came from was just really good and really made me feel better about where does our sport go moving forward, you know? And a lot of times you can feel like you're in the forest and all you can see is the trees. And so to see that other perspective was really nice. Before we get too far in, I really want to hear what you guys saw at the clinic and what you guys felt you learned as a rider. You know, I spent the hours right around my lesson, and during my lesson, you're so intensely focused. And so there's parts of the clinic that I, you know, essentially missed in terms of being able to view other riders. And I really want to hear about that. But before we jump into that, I have to give a couple of thank yous. And my first one and my biggest one is to Angela French. She loaned me her wonderful, beautiful horse named Leetry, and he's a Lusitano. He's 9 years old. I hope I got that right. I think so. And she allowed me to take this horse that I had seen a few times, and I reached out to her and said, you know, would you be interested in him going and attending this clinic? And she said, sure, why not? And, you know, that's a big leap for someone, I feel like. And I got a chance to ride him. I think I had 6 rides on him in total before we got there. And so we're kind of getting to know each other. And when I'm thinking of taking him down, I'm like, he's somewhere between an L2 and an L4 horse. And our first dressage lesson, when we go in on Thursday morning after his discussion classroom section, we were asked to go through the master's test. And you want to talk about a horse making a phenomenal effort in, you know, just giving me his all. And he did. He did so much. He gave me so much try. And I had so much support and help from Angela, from the braiding, the, you know, obviously the hauling down and all of that as well. And so much help from her. And it really allowed me to get the most out of that lesson and my other lessons with him. And not to mention, she was just good company. And so to have all of that, I mean, just phenomenal. And then my other people I need to thank are my Kansas friends. So we had a huge group that came down from Kansas. I think we had how many riders? 3 or 4 from Kansas?
Yes. And we had somewhere between 13 and 16 at my last count. Of course, I was getting dinner count sometimes. So it was between 13 and 16 Kansas participants overall, which is amazing. They always show up. The Kansas crew has been part of our working equitation family now for several years, and it was nice to see them show up. They all made the trip. It's kind of a long trip for them, but they made the trip, and they just kind of go as a whole crew, which is nice.
Yeah, absolutely. And then representing Oklahoma, we had me, Michelle, Bailey, and Angela. So I feel like we really showed up and came a long way for the Texas event. And there was others that obviously traveled further, but I was very happy to see so many familiar faces and enjoy that.
And if there's someone we forgot from Kansas or Oklahoma or anywhere else, sorry, there's a lot of moving parts. We are trying to keep up.
Yeah.
And thank you if we forgot you. Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And of the people that came down from Kansas, a special shout out to both Dion Newton and Marie Gifford. First off, they were willing to haul me down there and put up with me. But also, I know Dion pitched in quite a bit in the office and helping make sure everyone got checked in and out smoothly. And obviously, Marie, she helped out a lot as well and helped do setup and stuff on day one on Tuesday. And really, they just, you know, I came down knowing I was planning to help with the event setup and everything on Monday. I don't think they knew that. I hadn't asked them to do that. But they got there and they saw things that needed done and they just stepped right up to the plate. And the larger Kansas group, you know, this group of 13, 15, 16 people, they all pitched in yet again when it came time to tear down. You know, everyone, we get done with that clinic Sunday night, everyone's exhausted. We've been there, you know, having a blast, but we're all tired. And instead of them jumping in their cars and leaving, going back to their Airbnb or driving home, they all took the time to help carry every obstacle out of that arena, help take apart propane heaters and put them in the trailer, help load the trailer, remove the dressage court. I mean, just so much hard work and so appreciated.
Well, that's what it takes for this sport too. It's, we've seen now at many levels of competition that it takes a lot of people pitching in. There's so many things to move. And one more reason I love it, because everyone does. They pitch in, they get everything moved, and they reap the benefits. Also, Dion, thank you for the hours and hours of video you took of so many people, including Seth. So I was able to just sit and watch him, which was really nice. You take in so much more of the lesson when you're watching and not trying to video. So I really appreciate that. So Bailey, do you want to tell us a little bit about what you took away from the day that you got to watch?
Too much for my brain is what. No. I really enjoyed getting to hone in on specifics. So I think him focusing on a lot of transitions and, you know, different movements for the test, pirouettes. I know this just sounds so simple, but he went through every single step to do it properly, and then he just kept having them practice until they got it better and better, and just it opened my mind to exactly what he's looking for. So that helped me a lot, and that's what I've been thinking about. I really like that he talked about sportsmanship. I mentioned that earlier. It also really opens your mind to take things a little bit more seriously. Because it is. It's a sport. It's a discipline. If you're going to train your horse to do that, you better treat them like sportsmen as well.
Yeah, it's not a backyard hobby anymore.
Exactly.
There were two really big things that were takeaways for me. There was a lot of valuable information. But the first one was the videos that we got to watch of the World Championships. And he was discussing what he liked about each horse and how they did, and it just really gave us a visual of what we are striving for, because these were the top horses competing at the biggest competition, and it really gave you that nice visual before everything started. And then the next thing was, in my mind, it comes out to simple repetition. It was simple things. They're not simple. I shouldn't say that to the riders. They probably all want to strangle me right now. Not simple, but since he was coming at it from a judge's perspective and not a trainer's, it was put very simply. Do the pirouette, you know, the shoulder in front, keep the shoulder in front. If we have a dressage trainer and we're doing our homework, we pretty well know what that means. So he broke it down very simply. If you're doing your homework, these simple steps, and then over and over and over, I heard this, which told me two things. One, to remember that we have to just be repetitive with our training, continuously show our horse the right way and reward them for it. And two, that we all struggle with a lot of the same issues, and so do our horses. So I took probably 30 pages of notes, and a lot of it might look like the same thing over and over, but I tried to remember why we're going to say this, why the same thing is happening. And then I can go back with my dressage trainer and in my dressage theory and figure out, why do we constantly see this? Shoulder is not leading.
Yeah, I really thought it was really nice to see riders improving quite a bit. And none of them necessarily got it perfect. It was pretty difficult to get anything perfect. But when Jose got to see enough improvement for each rider, then he let them move on to something else. So, and that's a good reminder, I think, for just riding in general or anything that you're doing in life, that you got to make improvements, so you got to push yourself. But if you have something, take it, keep it consistent, and then you can move on from there.
Exactly. Yeah, you have to be a good steward of your horse and be a good horseman. You have to know what's enough. And a lot of that comes down to the homework we've done. Is it enough? Because in my case, I haven't been on my horse quite enough. No excuse, but I have to know where his limits are.
Exactly.
And if I want higher limits for him, I have to put in the work.
What you're saying about looking for improvement, and it doesn't necessarily have to be perfect. Can I just point out that maybe this also applies to sound on your podcast?
No, I think that does have to be perfect or everyone will quit listening immediately.
Yes, that's what I've heard.
Jose was really laid back through, I'm sure, what were probably some frustrating situations at times. Those of us who have trained know that even if we love the horse and rider pair in front of us, it can get frustrating at times in our mind. Maybe we don't know if we're communicating well or if they haven't done their homework or both, but he kept it very laid back, I thought anyway. He was easy to understand, which is a huge shout out to him, because I can't imagine going to Spain and trying to teach a group of people when that is not my native language. So
very, very patient.
Thank you, Jose, on that. You've done awesome. And he was funny, which is nice. You know, you get a few laughs. We were all freezing out there, which, by the way, we had patio heaters, which were fantastic. And I did park myself very close to them very often. But you get a good laugh, and that makes it all worth it.
For my part as a rider, it was a phenomenal experience, and the insistence on correctness. That was one of the biggest things that I noticed as a rider, and whether that was the geometry, which I definitely saw some shortcoming there. The geometry, or how we prepare the horse for the exercise. He was just so insistent that we have to get it right. Don't get it halfway and continue on. Go back, do it again. And I noticed in the notes that Michelle took for me that almost every exercise, come in and you halt. Come in, you do the walk pirouette. Come in, you do the simple change of lead, whatever it was. Almost all of them. It was 7, 8, 9 times. And she'd write, you know, first attempt, and here was the note. Second attempt, here was the note. You would have 7, 8, 9 on almost every single exercise, and they were all separated. They were all broken down into the different elements for that test. And he was just, you know, not harsh, not even necessarily overly demanding, I didn't feel like, just insistent that, no, we have to go back and get this correct if you want the good score, and if you want your horse to be riding better tomorrow, the next day, not just today. And so whether that was in the, you know, the pirouette, set the horse up, you know, don't, he could tell right when I came off the rail if I was not helping prepare my horse for the walk pirouette. And so that insistence was one of my big takeaways, and something that I brought home and will be putting into my training, is that halfway isn't good enough. You know, we have to stay in the realm of what the horse is capable of, but when we're within that realm, we have to just make sure we get it right, not halfway. And another facet was the correctness in the gait. He was really set on, it's all about the gait. And part of that preparation was to make sure that when we go into the pirouette or we're preparing for the change, that we don't lose the quality of the gait. I mean, and that was very stressed. And I very much appreciated it as a rider to not lose sight of that. You know, we stuck with that throughout the ride. And really, when you set these horses up and keep them fluid and keep them round, the horse will ride lighter. I mean, rides lighter. It's an easier horse to ride than the one you started with. And I really felt that when I came back, the way the schedule was, you would ride and have a day off, and then you would ride again. I know not all of the riders got that. We had some that were you know, due to the distance they hauled, they wanted both their lessons together. But for a lot of the riders, we had a day off in between. So I come back, and I didn't ride on my down day. Left my horse alone, let him rest because he was very tired. And we came back into the ease of handling. And I mean, that horse, so much improvement. And I will say, partly, Doreen gave me a little help in my warm-up, making sure that I was giving enough with my contact. But overall, so much better in my ease of handling, so much improvement. I mean, he really benefited from that first lesson. We asked so much, but then he came back and he was like, you know what? I know what you want. I know what you're expecting. And he gave so much yet again. And this is a horse that, you know, he didn't have the collection in the canter. He didn't have the canter walk. And so then to come in that ease of handling and work a huge variety of obstacles and be cantering the figure eight and come through and ask for the canter halt and then to rein back around those drums, you know, this isn't things that have been asking this horse that haven't been asked of him before. And his effort and just how willing he was, how light he was to ride and how soft he was throughout the ride. I mean, just so much improvement. And I felt like I really saw that pay off.
As an auditor, a couple more things that I forgot to mention earlier that came up after you started talking about your ride. I loved that he talked about preparation so much and not losing points on the rider. And that was preparation and geometry. Regardless of where our horse is at in training and how much we're riding, we can still prepare them for what comes next. And so many times, partly it was nice because my eye started getting a little more honed into what he was looking at through the days, which is the goal. But so many times he would say, you know, canter pirouette or walk pirouette or leg yield, any of these. And then you did not prepare. And you can see it, the horse is performing what they're asked to do, but only to the degree that the rider set them up for. And so we all have to think about that and prepare. And then geometry, which is something, again, I have to take away and remember. I know with my background in dressage, geometry is important. But we need to train these things regularly. For me, I use cones to help me with my geometry. You know, you and your trainer may have a different way. But I love to have cones set to remind me of a visual and a feel of how a serpentine is ridden, how a 20-meter, 15-meter, 10-meter circle look. Because why lose points on something that you're in control of? This is not how well your horse is feeling that day or how much you've trained. This is how much you've put in your time. So I really liked that.
Yeah, and again, with all of this, he was very persistent about teaching each rider how important it is to have a relaxed horse. Because without relaxation, there's nothing.
You have nothing.
Exactly.
And one other thing that I almost forgot to mention, fitness. Fitness for both horse and rider. I'm relatively fit. You know, I'm not in the best shape of my life, but I ride a decent number of horses every single day. And I worked. I was sweating out there. And especially doing the extended canter and sitting a lot of that trot. And it was so important that we need to feel fit enough to do this with our horses and really be that support and be able to maintain our own posture and our own seat for that period of time if we're going to ask them to do the same. And with the extended, that was another thing where especially the horses, you see the fitness, you know. They are not asked to do 7, 8, 9 circles like he was, repeating the exercise as part of their fitness. That's not part of their training program. And I noticed that there were a number of horses that didn't really even have an extended. And I think a lot of times we worry about slowing these horses down, bringing the tempo down, trying to collect them. And one of the things Jose stressed was that if you don't have enough canter in the extended, if you don't have enough energy there, you don't have it when you try and transition from the extended into the working and down into the collected. And even with Leetree, who has not been asked to do the collected canter, when I really pushed him out into the extended, even though it was a lot of work and a lot of effort and he's sweating, then we were able to transition. We had space to come down from the extended into a working and then come down into the collected. And without that, you know, I don't think you have the collected at all. But I will say it was a stretch. It was a stretch for him to be working that hard. You know, his fitness needs to come up to be able to do that regularly. And I saw that across a lot of horses.
Yeah, it's kind of what we talk about a lot. This isn't any new amazing concept, but just that reminder. What do we always say? Energy. We need more energy. If anything is going wrong, it's probably because there's not enough energy behind it. And one thing Jose talked about, I was kind of really enjoying and kind of surprised at how much canter he wanted from some of these horses for the extended, which was part of, you know, that's what we were there to learn. What do these judges want to see? But one thing he said that I found very helpful, fast and free. Fast and free. He said that a few times. And of course, we have to break it down. We have to have the balance. We have to have the bend. We have to have the connection with the horse. But that's for you to school at home. Just remember that extended canter, fast and free. It was really fun to watch these horses too, as they learned that they could open up a little bit more and move. That was neat.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to see some of that, Bailey, with the extended and coming down in those circles? What did you think?
I thought it was excellent getting to see those riders go from extended to, what do you call that, a medium canter, a collected canter. I think it helped the riders kind of get out of their comfort zone a little bit as well and just free up the horse and trust the horse. It's building trust. I really enjoy that. And it allows the riders to see what their horses can actually do while still under them. Yes.
Yeah, it was neat. Getting to see, again, I've been to a lot of dressage clinics and ridden in several different disciplines. But just in that condensed time, that 4 days of watching these horses get pushed so much in their extended canter and asked to do it correctly. He was not compromising bend or balance, you know. Push that horse, and then the improvement of the quality of canter when we came back down into a medium or collected was just awesome to see. It was like, oh, we sit here and work on all of this for so long, and all we really needed to do was say, let's move and get the energy that we're told we're supposed to have. Sorry to all of our dressage trainers who have been saying that for years. Energy.
I think it was really helpful for some of the riders to see that the horse can really open up and still be relaxed as well. And it's teaching them trust. Like I said before, it's tough for some of the riders. It's a little scary to go that fast.
That was about the only thing I felt really confident I was able to do going in. You know, you go out there and, you know, you have such excellent instruction and someone who's involved in working on the international level. And riding in front of him, I'm just like, well, I'm pretty much just like a monkey up here hanging off the side, not able to do anything right, you know. That's what you feel like. But in the extended, at least, having a background in some eventing and some jumping and starting colts and, you know, doing all of those things, I at least felt comfortable when he asked me to open up those horses. I mean, that was, and I think it really paid off. I don't think that Leetree and I could have made the progress towards the collected canter if I had been, you know, more conservative there. And he described it like that some, is take the risk of pushing that horse out. And for those of you that were there, I was confident I wasn't going to run him over. I know.
Oh, that's
I know there
fun.
Was some concern because he was like, 20 meters is right here. And he, you know, points down pretty close to his feet. And that's where we went. And if I can find it, I know someone has a picture of me and Leetree with all 4 feet off the ground, right in front of Jose. I mean, he's opened up. He's moving. He was booking it.
So I have video. Well, Dion, thanks to Dion, we have video, and I think it would be fun to post to our Facebook, just that little clip. I don't think Seth still, to this moment, realizes how close Leetree's feet and Jose's feet were.
Yeah, I was like, he might run him over.
I really thought Jose was going to be going home to Spain with a pair of crutches And I thought, man, you told him 20 meters is right here and you don't know Seth.
Yeah,
20 meters is here. That's where he's going.
I was confident, a big canter, galloping horse, something like that. I'm very confident with that, if nothing else. So.
You are. That's a strong suit of yours for sure. And while we're at it, we're talking about all these things everyone was struggling with so much. And they were, because we brought in an international perspective. However, there were a lot of great rider and horse pairs there. I learned a lot from watching a lot of you who rode there. And kudos to you, every one of you, for getting up in front of all of your peers and putting yourself in that position. You know, I can sit on the sidelines and say, well, if they would have prepared, which I was trying not to do, but we all have our own mind. And at the end of the day, I wasn't out there on a horse and you guys were. So kudos to you. And thank you for being there to help train my eye in what I need in the future.
Yeah, for me, it was really neat to see how much of a difference between movements that he wanted to see. Just like transitions in the circles from extended to medium to collected. He wanted them very obvious. No in between. He wanted them boom. This is a completely different section, and then collected as a whole. You better get collected right at this point. And then when you're done with that, and then right at, let's say, letter A again, now you're changing back to whatever you were supposed to be at. But
yeah. And I saw, or I felt the same thing in the ease of handling. You go in and ride the gate, and it's 8 or 9 consecutive exercises, and it's really easy to blend them together. You're riding that downward transition and you're already thinking about the kind of walk you want to the gate. And then as you're walking up, you're thinking about having to get turned around. So you're kind of doing this forward and sideways thing. And it doesn't look good. And when you go back and you break it down more and prepare, like he said, all of a sudden, each of those exercises is distinct and feels so much more fluid, more correct, more light, and the horse understands it better. That was one of the big things too. The horses don't understand when I'm trying to, you know, walk them up to this gate and press them around. They don't understand exactly where their body should be. Now turn on the forehand or walk pirouette, if that's all I was asking them for, that's something they could do. You know, a rein back, that's something they can do. An awkward rein back turn, sort of step sideways thing, you know, he doesn't know what you're asking for. And so that was really nice to see that come into play in the ease of handling, especially, you know, it, obviously important in the dressage, but it really paid off when I came back in the ease of handling.
You brought up a good point that Jose said, I believe during your lesson, Seth, on the ease of handling with Lee Tree, and if I'm not mistaken, it was during the rounding posts exercise. And I am paraphrasing here. I do have the quote written down, but I'm not going to be quoting Jose. So he was saying to stop worrying about what happened before and what will happen. Ride what you have now, which we know. When I rode jumpers, that was one of the biggest things I had to learn. You'd knock a rail. Like, don't look back. Don't worry about it. If you hit that rail and it fell, there's nothing you can do about that. But you can prepare your horse for the next fence. And it's the same idea with so many more elements thrown into it, because we're not jumping. We are practicing applied dressage on these obstacles. So if you messed up the last obstacle and you're worried, well, in the next obstacle, my horse is going to be fretting. So I'm going, just stop. Ride what you have right now and ride each piece as its own thing for your horse's sake too, and for your sanity.
Yeah, I have to remind myself often to look ahead instead of fretting on something that I've done wrong, because you get so focused on what you've done wrong that it just becomes a habit in your mind. Then you start doing that habit instead of forming a new habit in your mind to do right. And that's just in everyday life, I think. So starting over again, over and over.
It is. With my horse, he is particularly can get... He's very good at the lateral work, but he also anticipates the lateral work. So, for example, I know there's times we've been in an ease of handling and he maybe got a little too anxious on the lateral and I could feel he wasn't crossing well. He was just moving too quickly. So we get to the next obstacle and I'm still just worried about that. And instead of focusing, maybe we're at the switch cup now and I have a chance to bring his brain down and halt and just be on point and not have to move laterally, which would give him a break. I'm still riding that side pass pole that he didn't ride well, and I'm already worrying about it for the gate because he's not going to cross over his hind legs, or, and I end up being the reason we don't do well. Not him, not because he was anxious, but because I was riding the old obstacle through all of these future obstacles, and his anxiety is, of course, building because I'm going, you're going to do this wrong. I have to get it right. I have, instead of just saying, hey, we have a chance to halt and stand here and relax.
I've been on the other side too, where I'm like, I got this, and I'm going along, and I think I got it in the bag. I'm like, where am I? I've got to take a step back here.
Overconfident can get you too. That reminds me of my daughter.
Just having too much fun, I think.
Oh my goodness. I don't know that that's ever happened to me. I'm always just out there like, if I don't fall off, this will be a success.
That's true. Seth comes out of every ride and every lesson, and I can be thrilled with it, or I can have some constructive criticism. I'm ready ringside to tell him before I forget. And no matter what I say, how was your ride? He says, I didn't fall off. And I just always chuckle because I will come out of some rides, oh, that felt great. And oftentimes that's when I lose, or not so good. And sometimes that's when I've won, because we're not the best judge of our ride. But Seth always just says, well, I didn't fall off. And at the end of the day, I think, well, we didn't fall off. So,
yeah, I wouldn't say I necessarily think that I'm doing so good. But sometimes I'm like, man, my horse is doing so amazing. And then I'm like, where the heck am I supposed to go?
Well, you just take a note from me. You have to make sure you're setting your expectations or your bar at your level. So for me, that's I didn't fall off. And then that's good. Now, with all of this talk about all the amazing things that we learned, and it was a lot, and we had so much fun, we also got to sit down for an interview.
We were fortunate enough to sit down with our guest clinician trainer, Jose Andreas Benito, and he answered a lot of educational and also fun questions for us. So enjoy.
Hello, everyone. We are set down today in Weatherford, Texas with Jose Benito, and he is a Huawei judge, and he is here doing the Train to Win clinic hosted by the International Committee. Hello, Jose.
Hello. How are you?
Good. I'm good. Why don't you tell us a little about yourself? What's your background?
Okay. I'm from Spain. I born in a family of farmers. We have a farm there in Spain with a lot of cows and with cattle. And since I was a child, I was working at farm with cattle and horses. Then I studied, and I am a veterinary. I am specialized in equine reproduction. And unfortunately, I'm not a rider now because I had an accident more than 20 years ago, and it's not good for me to ride horses now. And only for that, I became a judge, and mainly in working equitation, because it's the discipline that represents what I have been doing for my whole life at the farm. And I have to say that it's a pleasure for me being here with you, and it's an honor to help you, the American team, to develop the international competition.
We're grateful to have you out here.
What are you currently involved in with horses and working equitation? You're talking about judging. Don't you also breed horses? Do you have what else do you do with horses?
Yes, I'm involved now in a lot of parts because I am veterinary. I work with horses. I have several horses at Spain, and I have a rider who trained my horses. I have now two horses training, one for working equitation and another one for dressage. And I'm also involved in the Spanish Federation in charge of working equitation. I help the technical director there to to create and develop the programs for the international competition, for the international team, working with the rules, more or less everything. I breed horses, I breed Lusitano horses, and I am the director in one Spanish for one Spanish horses breeder, and I'm very involved with horses nowadays.
Yeah, that's a lot.
So when were the first working equitation competitions held in Spain?
In Spain, we started working equitation in Spain from the beginning, from 1996.
From 96.
96. But I don't know the reason, because I wasn't there. Spain stopped competing working equitation after good results in European and World Championship. And we have been without working equitation in Spain for more than 10, 12 years. And since 2015, we are working again. And I think it was in 2015, our first competition and in Spain. And we had around 12, 15 competitions, national competitions every year in Spain.
Oh, fantastic.
What's the difference you see from showing in Spain as opposed to the U.S.
Okay, for us, and I know that for you is our tradition. Working equitation is inside of our Spanish riders' veins, and it's easy to teach them what we want to see, because they are used to ride with one hand and to use the garrocha and everything. And for me, that's the main difference. We have a culture there of working at farms with cows, with only one hand, using the garrocha and doing everything. I think is the main difference I can find. And all our riders nowadays are people who came from the farms.
So are there large numbers of junior riders in Spain? And is that number going up or down?
Well, it's not easy to answer that question, because last year we had the Junior World Championship, and we had in the qualifier more than 16 junior riders trying to go to be a part of the Spanish team. But nowadays they are not competing. Now we have 3, 4, 5 junior riders, and now we have a program there in Spain to have more junior riders. And the different federation, we have different federations in Spain. We have the national federation, and then each region has his own federation, and each federation has a program to have more junior riders. But we have the riders, but we need to find them, and we need to have him at working equitation. But I think we can have a lot of riders, junior riders.
Yeah, that's our goal for this year. We have the youth committee coming up, brand new for working equitation.
Ah, hopefully some good progress there too then.
Jose, what does the team selection process look like for the Spanish team?
Okay, we have had different programs, but this year for the European, we have yesterday we put on internet the criteria. Now we are creating a ranking, and we are going to have the first two riders from the ranking. Automatically, they are a part of the team, and the technical director and the team leader and someone else at the federation are going to choose the other two riders, because we have to consider that we have four trials here, and we can have very good riders in dressage and very good riders in easy handling, and maybe they cannot have the enough experience at the cow trial, And we want to have these other two riders in case we need people to lead the cow trial or the speed trial. And that's the reason and the program we are going to have this year.
Do you foresee working equitation becoming an Olympic sport?
I'm not sure. It's not easy because the first thing we need is be a part of FEA. We are not a part of FEA now. We are trying. We are working. I'm inside the Huawei board also, and I know from firsthand that we are working hard on it. But in a short period of time, I think it's not possible. Maybe in some years with more countries, more people involved, better organization of competition and showing better way working, I think we have some possibility, but I'm not sure.
Do you notice any common qualities among the top riders in Spain?
Yes, as I told you before, all our riders has some relationship with the farms or with the working at the farms. And for me, in working equitation, that's very important. And they have one thing, the very important thing is all of them have a strong friendship between them and they work together. We have some programs to help them to develop with professional trainers, and all of them are together, organize dinner. But at the end, what I find more common to all the riders is they want to improve, they want to compete, they want to win, and they are very close friends, and they help one to each other a lot.
Yeah, it's such a part of Spain's culture. It seems everyone just, yes, it's in them from the time they're little.
So yes,
it's part of life there.
Yes, you have to think that we have a different, I don't know how to say, in Spain we have a lot of hours of light, with light a day, and we are, we have a very good weather most part of the year. We are always not at home. We are always out, and we are always having some drink or having some fun with friends or visiting some friend. And for us, it's very common to have this kind of relationship between people in Spain.
Oh, that's wonderful. What qualities do you feel U.S. riders need to develop in preparation for international competition?
I think the what they have to do is train. The training is the basic for developing and for reach higher levels in working equitation or in everything you do in your life. And for me, they need to have lessons with professional trainers and to prepare the dressage exercises, because at the end, working equitation is the application of the dressage movements to issue handling, speed, or the cow trial. So they have to train a lot the dressage movements to improve and to reach higher levels.
Yeah, and to follow that question, what advice do you have for riders in the lower levels looking to advance?
Okay, good question. They have to train again a lot. They have to ask other riders how to do, and they have to train a lot again with professional, and they have to be consistent in the work. Don't forget, working equitation is a sport, and every sport we need to train. We need to be concentrated, and we need some be focused on what we are doing. And for me, they have to learn from good riders, only take the good things and enjoy, mainly enjoy the work in equitation at the beginning.
What, as a breeder of horses, you know, you're obviously breeding for certain qualities. What qualities are you looking for in a young horse to maybe help determine whether they're going to reach master's level?
Okay. For me, when I choose a young horse, the only thing you can see is the behavior and the quality of the paces. So you need good quality of walk, normal quality of trot. We don't need super trotting horses. If they have, it's better. And super quality of canter. For me, it's very important, the canter, but we can't lose the other paces, mainly the walk. But the trot, we can build the trot. And we have only three exercises trotting in the dressage trial. But for me, the most important thing is the canter and the head of the horse. Then when you ride the horses, you have to look for good contact, no reactions and everything. But at the beginning, when you choose a 3 years old horse to be trained, I always look at the quality of the paces and the head, the behavior of the animal.
Yeah, that disposition is so important. And I would imagine very much so when you have cattle in the mix. I know you spoke to this some earlier in the clinic, but can you share what some of your favorite exercises for strengthening the horse in preparation for collected work?
I always say the same, we have to follow the training scale. It's the most important thing in every equestrian sport, the training scale. We have to go step by step, because at the end, to perform high level exercises, we need a strong back, we need power behind, we need a lot of things that we can reach without respecting the training scale. And for me, is the basic at training a horse.
With training, do you have a preferred schedule to balance your dressage work, your ease of handling, the speed round, and cattle?
I always recommend not to train a lot easy of handling or speed, because horses are clever animal and they learn. They have to stop here or they have to turn here, and sometimes they don't wait for us. So I always recommend to training the dressage. Always dressage. It's the most important thing. And sometimes you cross an obstacle because you need to have your horse confidence in the obstacles. But you can train all the exercises we ask in the obstacles at the dressage trial. So train dressage.
And I know earlier you mentioned cattle. Training cattle was important.
Yes, for me it's very important, and for me is the origin of work in equitation. It's the reason because I am here in work in equitation. Because don't forget that work in equitation came from those countries at the southern part of Europe who used their horse to work with cattle at farms. And for me, my whole life, I have been working with cattle. I have been driving cows, herds of cows, or cutting calves, or something like that. For me, I don't understand working equitation without the cow trail.
When you're looking at riders in the saddle, and you know you maybe have imbalances or you know whatever like that, do you feel that riders should be preparing out of the saddle to get ready to ride these movements and maybe be better balanced? And if so, do you have any suggestions?
Of course, riders are a sportsman, and they have to train. It's not for the same for a horse to have a person over him with 100 kilograms that with 70 kilograms. So we need to help the horses, and we need to be fitted to ride horses and to train horses and know and put some more weight than necessary over the horse. For me, it's very important.
Absolutely. We got to be fair to the horses if we're going to ask them to do everything that we ask them to do. So the U.S. Traditional tack is Western.
Yes.
What challenges do you see with the Western tack?
Okay. It's a difficult question because I don't know your Western saddle. I have seen a lot of Western saddle. I don't know the advantages or of it. If the saddle has not advantages. But at the end, you have to find, because working equitation is this, you have to find the tack and attire for your riders to be recognized all over the world. And unfortunately, or not, you American are recognized as a Western style, as a cowboys. So, but you have to work to find the saddle for you who helps you to develop in working equitation in dressage, because it was the same in Spain. We have the vaquera saddle, and it's not the best saddle to dressage or easy of handling, but we have another saddle we use when horses are younger or something like that, and we are using now those saddles, and maybe it could help you to find the saddle you have to use.
Here's a fun question. What's an obstacle you see riders struggle with the most often, and what advice would you give for them?
They are always scary about the double slalom and the three drums, and they focus a lot on those obstacles, but they think that they are simple obstacles. For example, switching the glass. It seems so simple, but it's very difficult. And they don't give the importance that this obstacle has. But the main part of the problems are at the double slalom for the riders. And at the end, I only can recommend training and training and training and training.
What's something you see happening in the double slalom, like irregular gait or bend?
Mainly mistakes of the flying changes, mistakes with the bending, and sometimes lose the canter, and severe resistance sometimes, because in lower levels in Spain, and I think you have it also, we have a double slalom with simple changes, not flying changes, and that's very hard for horses. They don't know what they have to do. Now you stop, now you canter, now you stop again, now you canter. At the end, horses are crazy. What are you asking for? Okay, so the only way is training and training and training and training the obstacle.
Okay, so I know you've been doing a lot of traveling. You mentioned that earlier today. What events do you have coming up that you're excited about?
The most important, well, we have an event in March in Spain. It's our qualifier for our team for the European Championship. It's in Segovia in the middle of March. And I'm going to be a part also of the jury of the European Championship. And for me, it's the most important competition this year to be judged.
Awesome. I think we're ready to move on. We have a couple of questions for you and just quick answers.
Okay.
Quick answers.
I try.
They're just fun questions.
Yes.
Yeah. So we've got a few fun questions. First one. What is your favorite obstacle to judge?
The gate.
What is the toughest obstacle?
For me, is the double slalom.
What is your favorite trial to watch?
Easy handling and cow trial.
What do you think is the hardest phase for the competitors?
The hardest trial for the competitors, for me, nowadays, the lower marks are dressage. But the I think that for riders is the most difficult trial, because they enjoy the easy handling, the speed is a speed, and the cow trial, unfortunately, so many people make it for fun and enjoy, but they don't compete hard. But for me, I think that the dressage is where they have the lower marks and where they have to improve.
And last but not least, will you tell us a memorable moment in working equitation for you?
When Spain wins the silver medal in France in 2022 is what's incredible, because we were not expecting that result. And even I cry a little bit.
Oh, I'm sure that was very exciting.
Yes. And at the end, I was alone in my chair there, judging the cow trial without anything by my side. And I was alone there, crying like a child. And it was very, 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 I have a very good memory about this championship.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being here. I'd love to have you.
Yes, thank you for sitting down with us, and thank you for coming to teach as well.
Also, thank you for your involvement internationally. Everything that you're doing in Spain and in the U.S., and I know you're traveling a ton, so everything you're doing everywhere is helping grow this sport and send it in the right direction. And without you guys, we wouldn't get to play in it and hope that we get to do something big one day.
Now, it's a pleasure for me, because I work in equitation is a part of my life. Without knowing, since I was a child, and I like to show our culture to other countries. And it's a pleasure for me to know how they know us because of work in equitation. It's a part of Spain now. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you to use a way for contact me to be here, and thank you to all of you for this interview. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to follow Everything Working Equitation for more content. Until next time, keep learning and ride well.